Welcome back to the Hexdrinkers House of Common, your one-stop shop for all things competitive and at the common rarity. Chev.
Hi, Julian.
I feel so close to you right now. It's a...
Exactly. That is the exact length we can do before copyright takes
account. I was going to say, yeah.
I think it's like 30 seconds or 10 seconds, but we're err on the side of caution. Yes, this is one of our probably our next three recordings. We're doing it from the same location. So we're joining the Hex Drinkers South HQ and the Hex Drinkers West HQ, and we're smushing them together to the Southwest HQ.
The West HQ flew me in. There was an important, you know...
business. There's business, a summit.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah, so yeah. I'm in town for official reasons only, of
right.
course.
Right. We didn't do Magic 30 because we had our own very special meeting that we needed to get done.
Yes. But that doesn't mean we're not going to put out an episode of the House of Commons.
Not.
And there is a ton to talk about.
As always.
As usual. Real quick, before we get into more exciting things, I just want to say, actually, just a couple hours ago, I got my ass handed to me by one of the lovely members of the PDC League. That's Ooh. Right, I am now negative again. I believe I am...
You were negative last week, too?
Yeah, so... So technically, I've played two PDC games this week. One you will hear about this week, and then the next one we'll save for the next cast. But I'm negative again, which is sad. Not much to say about this because it was just a relatively quick game. I was playing against one of the lovely members of that Discord, the EDH. Which is
bold of them for playing PDC with the EDH as a name.
I really appreciate them trying to take up the mantle of that entire format.
Yes.
But yeah, they were on Bloodbraid Elf.
I mean, it worked out for them.
Yes, it did. Bloodbraid Elf has everyone's favorite mechanic, Cascade, and also Haste. This was just, shockingly, pun intended, just a very straightforward aggro deck. We're running 36 creatures in this. A majority of them are overstatted or have Haste, or both. And it turns out that I just didn't draw particularly well, and I got ran over both games.
They were quite quick. We talked about briefly beforehand. Julian was like, "Oh, we should work on this together." But given the nature of Jelectrode and I guess the nature of Bloodbraid Elf, everyone's doing things very quickly. There's not many things to help out on. And I remember I was sleeving up a deck I'm going to bring out in the Hexdrinker Olympics. So tune into our next Hexdrinkers episode to learn more about that. Mm-hmm. But I believe it was game two. You just said, "Chev, I don't have any islands." And given that it's a red-blue deck you're running, that seems problematic at best.
Yeah, it was a... the first game, I really just got run over. I just didn't draw enough removal. And then the second game, like you said, I didn't have any islands. And I had plenty of removal, so I was able to kind of one for one for a bit. And I nearly stabilized, but there's just enough burn in... that list that the EDH was able to eke it out, even though I did nearly stabilize. And Kuzik Flame Breather and Thermal Alchemist.
Gotcha.
Which are the very nice hitters. Because they've got three toughness, which can block a lot of the two power hasters he had. And I were getting some damage, and I got the EDH down to about, I think, 10 life.
Do you think it's the EDH or the DH?
The E, the D, and the H are all capitalized.
I see.
But there's no underscore or space in there.
I like the DH. I've decided.
Fair enough. Well, shout out to the DH. They were a lovely person, and I enjoyed the games, even though I did not perform. I did think it was interesting, the deck they brought in, the take they've kind of chosen in this metagame.
Yeah.
Gruul is not something you see that often, and obviously red is very powerful, but the green was different, and the Bloodbraid Elf actually really put in work. Just being able to have a hasty 3-power beater, presumably another hasty 3-power beater, it just works. It's from what I can see, there's not any like fancy tech, anything cute, any like, oh, we get to play this super powerful card,
right?
Like you might in like a blue black deck. It's like modern zoo almost, but with.
I did see a wild Nakadil out there at one point.
Yeah, game one, turn one, wild Nakadil was rough. That was rough. Monastery Swift Spear in here as well. Scab Clan Mauler absolutely kills. It's a 2-mana 1/1 with Trample for Gruul, but it's got Bloodthirst 2, so it comes in as a 3/3 Trample most times. So that was putting in a lot of work, but yeah. I thought it was interesting, the kind of different aggro strategy that they brought to the table. Because we talked about a lot of aggro strategies over the course of the league, but always nice to see something new.
Damn straight. So in the wider world, switching from PDC to PDH, and specifically CPDH, we have two new members of the Budget Brews Deck Database Committee for CPDH decks.
Nice.
So I'd like to welcome Tanner Tanzoid and Puzzlebox. We held a whole process. I was traveling at the time, so big shout out to Clay and Ryan for really putting this together. The actual submission process, and or I guess election process, I'm not really sure what to call it, but people had to answer a questionnaire to be considered for a place on the database committee, answer a questionnaire, do a video interview with Clay and Ryan, and then given a sample deck list that Ryan made. I forget, I think it was a red-blue aggro list that he put specific things in that we have tenants against on the DDB and bad card choices, and was asking how you would evaluate that deck. It was probably the most intensive and accurate job interview process I have ever seen in my life. And so coming out of it, we added two new people. We loved the way that they kind of approached the deck building and how they were willing to work with the hypothetical deck creators to kind of make sure that we build on the vision of the deck's author and not just kind of steamroll over, because that's not what we're trying to do on the database committee. So welcome Tanzoid and Puzzlebox. Puzzlebox constantly is putting out new videos and content and has been really leaning into CPDH recently too, so check those out or reach out to him in the Discord. But yeah, we're finally back to finishing up the analysis on a couple submissions as well, because we have two new decks in the deck database.
Yes, we do. I just want to extend my congrats to those lovely people as well. Yeah, the process was thorough. You were like, hey, you should apply for this. And I was like, apply? And you were like, yeah, here's the link. And I looked through and I was like, that's a lot. That's
I'm
kind
applying
of
applying to real jobs.
I was like, yeah, I have other things that are filling my time, and yeah, that seems like a lot of work. But I couldn't think of two people who are more qualified for this. So, mm-hmm. Very excited to see what they bring to the table and how they help the community grow as a whole. Speaking of growing as a whole, like you said, two new lists. What do we got?
Something that we talked about on a previous episode of this podcast. Given the direction that CPDH has been moving in the online meta, which is to say, aggro and quicker. We have two lists that really embody that. It's kind of funny to look at these from the lens of remembering how all the original decks on the database looked and felt, and how you needed a complex primer to explain what the deck is trying to do, to explain all the intricacies. And now we're at a Fathom Fleet Swordjack deck brought by Medwards, with the primer. The plan of this deck is really just to win the game. That's it, pretty much. Cast the Swordjack, attack as soon as possible. And that makes sense. For a list that is literally, you know, as much ramp as you can, lands, get a little life when you can, draw, and then really just play a bunch of artifacts and swing. We have Fathom Fleet Swordjack, and then we have Carter Doomscourge from Nate Diggity. So two classic deck builders bringing out their high-intensity aggro builds. No blue decks this time, which is kind of hilarious. Red might be sneaking up as the third best color, but might sneak into number two slot.
Yeah, red is really putting its best foot forward in CPDH and in PDC, and we're even seeing, you and I have been playing more red decks in PDH itself, but yeah. I'm huge on this Fathom Fleet Swordjack list. We discussed a similar list from one of our gameplay videos. Yeah, this is a deceptively powerful list, right? Because it, like you said, it plays a lot of ramp and artifacts. There's plenty of ways to just generate a bunch of artifacts or even tokens, even in something like mono red and, you know, at the common rarity. But yeah, we're playing things like Bonder's Ornament, of course, is a classic, Mind Stone, but then we're also just playing things like Prophetic Prism and Arkham's Astrolabe that just cantrip and filter our mana, even though we're in mono red, but they just add extra damage every time we're swinging with the Swordjack.
Yeah, I also really love the dominance of Hoarding Ogre. I've loved this guy since I was able to run a red draft deck for AFR last summer. But Hoarding Ogre, the 4-mana 3/3 that whenever it attacks, you're making treasure tokens. And like Julian mentioned, treasure tokens and objects are going to be huge in any deck that cares about artifacts. But having a creature that is big enough, but not problematic enough that it won't be the first thing removed from the board, but can just continuously ramp you in mono red, is incredible.
Yeah, for sure. The ramp is huge. And also, these are just more artifacts on the board. We're making a bunch of kind of game object tokens. We're doing treasure, but we've also got a big blood package, things like Falkenrath Celebrants. Things like Ceremonial Knife as well. And then, of course, you know, we're doing treasures, Unexpected Windfall, Cease of Spoils, even Rapacious Dragon finding its way into here just because it's a body and it gives us two more artifacts. One of the things that I think is the most underrated about Fathom Fleet Swordjack is its encore ability, right?
Yes.
In something like CPDH where the commander is so central and essentially here, really our only way to win the game, as was stated in the primer, is we need the Swordjack. So being able to encore the Swordjack is huge. It gives us essentially another cast of it. Air quotes there.
Yeah.
And
air quotes in a audio medium.
Yes. And also, what's huge for the encore is that now we get to attack everybody and deal damage to everybody as opposed to one person with our actual sword jack.
It's not in this deck, and I don't think it ever will be, and I don't really think it should. Maybe this is something more for PDH or the pals to play around with, is could you make an encore commander work with stickers? Pretty sure that the sticker changes the stats of the card, and then when you encore it, you get three copies of the stickered power toughness. But I was just thinking of that with all the love that recent cards in red have gotten that use stickers, particularly thinking of Blank Goblin, who on rate usually produces more mana than Seething Song if you pick the right sticker sheet. So if stickers can come into our lovely format, which it's only a matter of time. I wonder how that would work with something like this. But yes, another great deck from Medwards, constantly keeps churning them out. Fathom Fleet is a powerful deck and an easy one that I think we can put a stamp on approval for people who are just trying to get started with a solid CPDH list that gives you one goal and a pretty easy way to get it.
Yeah, there's a reason that a lot of people, when they get into something like Standard for the first time, a lot of people go towards mono red or red deck wins.
Yeah.
Generally, it's cheap. This deck is coming in at $35. Yeah. and also, it's easy to get the hang of, and it just feels good to attack, and a lot of times they're very powerful strategies, so they'll win you the game as well.
Indeed. Jumping into our next deck, Nate Diggity 7, added again, Carter Doomscourge, which in the stats has won 7 out of 10 games in the online CPDH meta. Carter is an absolute force, coming in at 4 mana, 4/3, ETBs. Until your next turn, creatures your opponents control attack each combat if able and attack a player other than you if able. So, goaded. And then whenever an attacking creature dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. That's a lot. And it really capitalizes on where the meta has gone, as we previously mentioned, aggro. And, alright, everyone's doing aggro, you can, just not at me.
Yeah, this is a weird combination of, like, an aggro control deck almost, right?
Yep.
We are getting aggressive, but we're controlling the flow of combat and also kind of putting up the walls against us where someone like, you know, a blue-white player in EDH might have Ghosts of Prisons and Propagandas. We just have Goad, another mechanic that we just love.
It's a big one. Yeah.
This list is giving me very much almost blue-black vibes where, for the most part, we are just running a lot of the best ofs, right? Mm-hmm. All the good ramp. We have all of the good black removal, plus Edict effects, Fleshback Marauder, and the like. And we're also running some heavy Monarch packages, which is obviously very good, because if no one can attack you, they cannot take the Monarch.
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of that. I was thinking of the, you know, it gives another reason for your opponents to fight each other. But yeah, if you cannot be attacked, you remain Monarch. Brutal. We've also got the Flicker package, the Mono Black Flicker package that is in all of these kind of ETB commanders. Originally, I think we were first caught on to how powerful Black Flicker was with Oakley's Grey Merchant of Asphodel list, which is running all the bounce and flicker you possibly can, getting some new tools in Bro. Check out our next episode. Mm-hmm. But with Carter, it just the impact of having everyone swing constantly and essentially just keep yourself out of harm's way for the entirety of the game if you have it kind of your way is really, really strong.
For sure. And of course, since people are not going to be attacking us, we can't get Carter to die in battle that easily. So to be able to trigger our things like Undying Evil and Supernatural Stamina, we have all the good Deadly Dispute style cards to continue to get card advantage.
Right.
Which is something that I forgot to mention in the Swordjack list. There are also several ways in that list to sacrifice the Swordjack and get him in the graveyard so that we
can... Right, so you can get the actual... Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so a commonality between these two decks in that, but... But yeah, we want Carter to trigger every turn.
Mm-hmm.
After turn 4 or turn 3, if we have an early mana rock, basically we want our opponents attacking each other every turn of the game. And I guess we will just kind of sit back and let the chips fall as they will.
Right, with our 29 removal spells.
Yes, that as well. Just in case somebody gets through, you know.
Yeah. Thank you again for Nate Diggity, another great list. I'm excited for both of these. I definitely feel that all of the combo and control of early CPDH as we played it was fun, but sometimes you just want to turn cards sideways.
And for sure.
There's nothing like a good, strong red commander to deal heaps of damage, and especially you add black for the best removal as well. It's a dangerous package.
Well, we'll see how I feel about red, you know, after a couple more weeks, but I do like that we're moving away from what felt like mostly blue-black dot format, you know?
Yes.
Even though Carter is a pain in my butt.
Yeah, a pain in a lot of people's butts.
For sure, for sure.
All right. So those are our decks for the week, and we're going to try and do a little conversation about a topic this week.
You wouldn't believe it, but we actually do have another Magic the Gathering trading card game, TM, expansion set coming out.
Yes.
The Brothers War.
Correct.
The Bro, as it would be.
Yes.
Turns out there's a lot of artifacts in there.
They were a fan of artifacts, these bros.
Yes, the bros. So we just wanted to kind of talk about artifacts in general in CPDH, right?
Yes.
They fulfill a lot of roles, and there's a lot of good staples, and we just wanted to kind of highlight those. We are going to see a few of them being reprinted in both the set as well as the like flashback.
Yes. That's going to be blueprint. So cool. Right. I don't know what to call it. The branding, I guess maybe, are they just like retro artifacts? Because it felt like the branding on these was not as clear as the Strixhaven Mystical Archive, where they were like, enjoy, Mystical Archive. And maybe it's because the treatments for those were different enough, and they had the Japanese versions as well that it was just talked about a little differently. So they're called the Brothers War Retro Artifacts, or an even better set code than Bro, it's brrr.
Okay, Cardi B.
But there's plenty in here. I'm trying to see, we have a couple standouts that were, none were printed at common, but if we do have a few common pieces that were printed at uncommon, right? So we got Pristine Talisman, we got Ichor Wellspring. There are good PDH cards you can find in here, but man, they look so good in that brown frame.
Yeah, these, in for the members of our community who do enjoy to pimp their decks out a little bit, cough, Alcadron, cough, these are going to look really good in foil, and I'm a huge fan of the... Recently, I've been getting into the old border a lot, so these are going to look very nice in some
especially
some paper decks.
Cheap foils. Cheaper foils than where a lot of these might have come from.
Yes, for sure, because a lot of these are some very old cards.
But enough about new cards. Let's talk about cards that are already out that we enjoy in our CPDH format.
Technically, these are already out as well.
Well, shut up.
Shoot, you're right. Okay. Yeah, so the beautiful thing about artifacts is that in something like CPDH, they fulfill a lot of roles, right?
Yeah.
So the base level generally is we're running mana up. Green is kind of not really that prominent in the format, or it hasn't been overall.
Yes.
So you're not seeing a lot of ramp. And the ramp package has certainly been buffed out over the last couple of years at common, but it doesn't have a lot of the staples you might see in regular
right,
EDH,
right?
So to make sure that we can hit those higher mana values, especially if we have a higher CMC commander or we just need to play our commander a bunch of times, we're going to want to play Mana Rocks.
Yes. There are the classic Signets and Arcane Signet, which is a Signet, and all of those. But I think what has really jumped out in common and actually exploded during Baldur's Gate Commander Legends is 3-mana Mana Rocks with upside. So Manalith with upside has been kind of a thing that's been around for a little while, but it has been getting better and better with things like Bonder's Ornament, which Papa Popper will fight for, should still be in every deck, and then it's Lantern of Revealing, it's kind of its pseudo-cousin that came out in Baldur's Gate. But I think like Baldur's Gate had 4 or 5 of these 3-mana rocks that just had a pick-your-poison for best ability. Like, what is it, Vessel of Unending Water or something?
The fish. Yes.
The fish. The fish with water coming out of its mouth it gives you no max hand size, which is a thought vessel for an extra mana, but it taps for any color.
We even got the first walrus, which technically a creature, but once again, still a 3-mana mana rock.
I think it ETBs and you scry too, right?
Yes.
It's got something else going on. And then moving from Baldur's Gate, but even before then with Crimson Vow, Honored Heirloom, I think that is more than Bonder's Ornament. We see that in every list now, right? Because there are so many decks that want to utilize the graveyard, put important pieces there, bring them back. I'm thinking like High Tide combo, you usually are recurring something in the graveyard.
Yeah.
So being able to stop it with just a mana rock that is benefiting you the whole game, and then you can just get whatever you need out of a graveyard, comes in more handy than Relic of Progenitus, honestly, more often than not in a multiplayer format.
Yeah, I mean, Relic certainly sees play. We do love Relic. But yeah, the fact that Honored Heirloom, you have it on a mana rock as well, is just huge. And, you know, I'm big on Honored Heirloom, actually. I've started playing some of my EDH decks. It's that good.
Yes.
And it's nice to just kind of be able to snipe things. But I'm big on the whole three-mana mana route coming back. That's,
yes.
That was like a contentious topic in the EDH community for the longest time. I'm happy that we
get to play. Really, since Arcane Signet. It was the Brawl decks that did it. Eldraine, you know, you did a lot of things right, but you did so many wrong.
I'm glad that we're wholeheartedly embracing them in the format, and I'm glad that Wizards continues to print ones that they're just like, here, listen, taps for any color of mana, and you get this slight upside.
Yes.
Right? That's perfect. And I would say probably one of the biggest potential upsides, we just got a reprint downshift of Unstable Obelisk.
Yes. Warhammer, you did two things for us, and they were incredible. Go for the Throat at common, and Unstable Obelisk at common. And having a way for all colors to deal with any type of permanent, that is huge in this format. Particularly something that's even pointed out in the recently talked about Carter deck. What do you do with an Oubliette on the field if you're in red? The tools like Liquid Metal Torque are not available at common yet to turn things into artifacts to deal with them in your own way. So having more spells that can deal with any color permanent is incredibly necessary for strategies that kind of hinge on the commander. So having a rock that can sit out there, yes, you're paying 7 mana for the activated ability, but that's a lot better than sitting there unable to use your commander because it's been phased out of existence.
Yeah, seriously. We had things like Scour from Existence, which is a 7 mana instant that just exiles a permanent.
Right.
But you cannot compare that to something that you can just utilize as mana ramp and another artifact on the field if you care about that. And then, if you need to pull the plug, you can drop the obelisk and...
Yeah.
I'm just imagining like somebody on the bottom just like, that's not looking so, just kind of give it a little push and just, exactly.
That is like, I think we were talking about this, quick segue, a little bit earlier when flavor text doesn't match the card. And I think Unstable Obelisk could use more fun flavor text. The idea of the obelisk itself falling is silly. We should encourage that.
One word. Timber.
Timber. Moving on from mana rocks with upgrade, with upside, we're going to kind of move into the second category, which, you know, you have all these rocks on the field, you've ramped, but now it's time for them to do other stuff. And kind of like Honored Heirloom, there's a ton of cards that can help stop a graveyard from running out of control. We saw, like, Fathom Fleet Swordjack, if you can remove that from the graveyard,
yeah.
Or the High Tide combo, or really... all kinds of decks are going to care. Or maybe you're running something like Tormod where you want to deal with your own graveyard. Honored Heirloom is great, like we talked about. Relic of Progenitus is great, like we talked about. Tormod's Crypt, still worth running in plenty of lists.
Yeah.
There is a reason that you do want to get rid of a full graveyard.
Yeah, maybe maybe you want to get rid of your own graveyard, like you said, because you're running Sir Conrad.
Ooh, yep.
And you want to dome people for, you know, 10 or something.
What a play.
Yeah. It's actually shocking. How much the graveyard is utilized by all sorts of decks and in all sorts of ways. Sometimes we're doing combos, like you said, in like blue-black lists. A lot of black lists just have a lot of built-in recursion.
Yes.
They just want to get things back. And if you can just blank a spell because someone targets something and then also you're now denying them that resource, maybe they want to get like a Gary back or something.
Right.
It's huge. And then for something like a Fathom Fleet, like, yeah, just... sorry, you're gonna have to pay for this the hard way.
Yep.
Like, you don't get to encore. So yeah, the graveyard is so huge. You have to be packing graveyard hate. Basically, a majority of that is going to be found in the artifacts.
Right. And the good thing about all of these is I don't think any of the rocks we've talked about or any of the artifacts we've talked about are specific to a color. They're none of the more recent colored artifacts. So these can and should be run in basically every deck.
For sure. I'm trying to think what sort of colored artifacts see play.
I think there's a few equipment. I've tried to sneak red equipment into Voltron lists a few times, like Crystal Slipper, and there was an upgraded version of that that came out on AFR that I forget is some sort of
the boots of speed.
The boots of speed.
How do you want to go? Speedily. Chef, it's funny that you should mention that because that's a sneaky little segue into our last kind of look at you. Are you a podcaster or what?
I mean, it's taken long enough.
Yeah. So the kind of the final category we want to talk about is equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Equipment are an interesting card type, and it's been something that's been very polarizing across all formats over all the years. Obviously, there's, you know, I'm a huge fan of the swords, and there's things like Commander's Plate and stuff, but generally,
yep.
Equipment, not that good. But in something like CPDH, when we're slowing things down and the overall power level is much lower, equipment become very potent. You can take the time to actually equip things up. And like you were saying, giving things vital keywords like haste, trample, protection, a lot of times in the form of shroud or hexproof or straight up protection. These are going to come a majority of the time from your equipment. So they're a huge pickup for the format.
And like we always kind of mention here with PDH in general, all decks are essentially Voltron decks. Because you need your commander out way more than an EDH deck where any card can have a massive swing on the game. In PDH, your commander really matters. So most decks are running at least a few pieces of equipment to protect your most vital resource. Just like you said, you know, the Haunted Cloaks, the Whisper Silk Cloaks, those kind of cards that really kind of keep your commander in a shell are probably worth a couple slots right alongside your Relic of Progenitus and Honored Heirloom in every deck. But kind of branching out of that, there's... As we've seen more aggro, there's a bigger push for the more aggressive set of equipment, the kind of token creator package of Ceremonial Knife, Prying Blade, and Gold Vein Pick. All create either blood tokens, which are incredible, or treasure tokens, which ramp is good for everyone.
There's a lot of pickups. Some people will just run straight up equipments just to win in combat, like you said.
Yep.
Being able to generate resources is even more important.
CPDH.
Yeah, as that was coming out, I'm not going to lie, I was like, where am I going with
here
this?
Here we are, to educate
where
the people.
Where am I going with it? After you just had such a great moment, I'm over here just bringing us down. But yeah, they're incredibly important. And in some cases, equipment are even essential for combos. Viridian Longbow is the one that comes to mind. Another great thing about a lot of these is that they can be searched off something like a Trinket Mage.
Maybe this will be something that we're actually teaching you guys, because right now, you know, we're assuming that a lot of our listeners do have experience with CPDH already. Using things like Trinket Mage to get artifact lands, that's not what we're really talking about, but it is quite amazing. Because don't forget, there's that entire cycle of indestructible bridges causing mayhem in 60 card, still pretty powerful in 100 card, but worth remembering if you're in a blue deck.
People a lot of times forget about those artifact lands, but they are indeed artifacts. If you need to, anything from just having a great furnace on the field, which is going to help your Fathom Fleet Swordjack, or if you have one of the many Deadly Dispute things and you don't have a creature, you can sacrifice an artifact for a lot of those.
Yep.
And if you need to,
it could be a land.
Yes, exactly.
I know the day is coming. I live in fear of it, given how our playgroup has developed over time. And that is when we get a downshifted version of Ensoul Artifact. And we get decks that are animating our indestructible artifact lands. Darksteel Citadel, you've terrified us for years now. Please let it end, but I don't think it will anytime
soon. I have very, very, very horrifying memories of when Oakley, in our very early days when we were playing what we thought was standard.
Yes, it was not.
Oakley was playing an Ensoul Artifact deck with Darksteel Citadels and other low mana cost artifacts. And dang, that was a deck. That was actually a real deck that saw a couple Pro Tour finishes across about a year or so.
Yeah, it kind of went better than Dirtly Abzan Counters and whatever you were running at the time.
God, who even knows what I was running at the time. Yeah. Tangent aside, though.
Yeah. So, artifacts good, I think.
Yeah, artifacts are huge. Just kind of recapping, the fact that we have good mana fixing and good ramping kind of across... Yep. All the colors is huge. The fact that basically all the artifacts that see play, I mean, a majority of artifacts that are printed are colorless, but the fact that all decks get access to these various upsides, whether it's as minute as just nuking something from a graveyard with an Honored Heirloom, or being able to actually remove a permanent with an Unstable Obelisk and everyone in between, I think it's just better for the format that we all kind of have these...
Tools?
Yeah.
Pieces?
These
things?
This toolbox.
Thingy-ma-jigs?
This toolbox, for sure.
I'm interested to see how the new Mishra and Urza at Uncommon play with all these artifacts. Because those abilities are... You get the extra trigger. Mishra is 2 red mana. Urza is a Power Stone, which, another artifact. You get them when you discard an artifact card. So I do wonder, throwing all of these into a deck and sticking one of the bros at the front, how powerful that's going to be. I'm excited to build at least one of those, even if it isn't competitive.
Well, spoiler alert, but we may be in the process of, here's something we don't do often, writing articles.
You know we can't write. We can't even read.
Impossible. But keep your ears to the ground for something like that. And if you are also a fan of EDH, we may be doing something with these as well. So just stay tuned for that.
Yeah, forget Mishra and Urza. Keep an eye out for cards that just reference artifacts during your pre-release, especially in white and blue, because I think those are the colors that are going to see the most benefit from it. All right, should we wrap up this first topic? I think you wrapped it up quite well, so maybe we already did.
Consider it wrapped. It's almost, well, we got a little bit, but it's Christmas. I'm wrapping. I'm wrapping. I think we should just finish this cast off with, of course, a deck of the week.
Deck of the week.
This is a Teamer Sabertooth list brought to us by ZJM.
Thank you, ZJM.
You rock. Anyway, this is a different sort of list. And the reason I want to highlight this is for a couple reasons. One, this is mono green, right? Teamer Sabertooth, 4 mana, and then you can pay 1 and a green to return another target creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, the Sabertooth gains indestructible. We don't really care about the indestructible part, but basically we just want to be bouncing things back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a combo deck, right? So this is a combo deck in an increasingly aggro meta in, I would say, objectively the worst, because we both agree that green is the worst combo color, and this is mono green, no black, no blue to supplement. Yeah. But what this deck aims to do is it's going to ramp early. Now remember, of course, green gets access to that land ramp, unlike a lot of the other decks that rely on artifacts.
Yes.
And then...
Ooh, callback. Very nice.
What? Podcasters! And then, while we're doing that, we also want to be using Teamer Sabertooth to bounce our creatures back to the hand to get more ETB value. Hopefully, we're not facing down a ton of pressure, but otherwise, we can just kind of fill the board up with bodies just to kind of stem the tide before we get to our combo. Speaking of the combo, wouldn't you guess it? We're going to attempt to generate infinite mana. So, as stated by ZJM, first off, we need to play a creature that taps for at least 4 more mana than it costs to cast.
That's a lot of mana.
You lost me, but they're luckily, they illuminate us. Priest of Titania is huge, tapping for 1 green for every elf we control, or by land enchantments and something like an Arbor Elf, which can untap lands.
Right.
Then we're going to need to equip the creature with a haste equipment. Callback.
Ooh.
Such as a Haunted Cloak, which is my personal favorite, but Strider Harness will also do the job. We're going to tap the creature for mana, return it to the hand with a Sabertooth, and then repeat playing it,
gotcha.
Equipping it, tapping it. So it's a bit convoluted, right? You need to be tapping for a lot of mana, especially since we do need to re-equip it with the haste each time. But eventually we get infinite mana. Once we generate infinite mana, we can, through various creatures that draw cards, things like Elvish Visionary, mm-hmm. Things like Llanowar Visionary, we'll be able to draw as much of our deck as we need until we find a creature that allow us to win the game by infinitely casting and replaying. Bond Beetle, 1 green, when it enters, put a 1/1 counter on target creature, can make some of our creatures infinitely big.
Yep.
We can also gain infinite life with Healer of the Glade, which is 1 green on ETB. We're going to gain 3 life. I'm assuming that's how we're going to close out the game.
Or using something like Mold Shambler, which when it enters the battlefield and is kicked, destroy target non-land permanent, I think?
Non-creature permanent. Yep, we could do that and destroy...
Ooh, all lands.
Yeah, we could destroy all lands, which is huge. We could also make infinite elves with Lissalina Huntmaster, assuming we already have that on the field. And I'm assuming that Ivy Lane Denison can also make us infinitely large as well. So a few different ways, looking like it's going to require the combat step. But that's fine. This seems like a very kind of grindy, value-oriented list. So I'm assuming that once we get to this, we're going to be able to just kind of clean things up. A lot of other cool, interesting cards here. A lot of the land enchantment things that we would see in something like a Weaver's list.
Yep.
Just lots of good ETBs, whether that's things that search elves. A lot of our combo pieces are elves, and a lot of our value is elves. And then, of course, some cute things like Snake Umbra and Masked Vandal and Haze Frog and such.
Absolute all-stars.
Mentioning the removal package, we're doing mostly fight slash deal damage equal to power. We've got things like Lignify, as well as a few things like Broken Wings and Clip Wings, which allow us to deal with flyers, because we cannot really get rid of those in green.
Well, we can. It's destroy target flying creature.
Because we can't really tangle with those in combat in green. Yes, you're correct, Joe. I'm going to cut that part out. So you will just be laughing and no one will know why. But anyway, this is a different kind of list. It really feels like almost an odd man out amongst the current crop yes. of things that we see coming in. But I like that this is another playstyle that can come to the table. I like that green is getting some representation in the database. And
stay strong, Team of Sabertooth.
For sure, for sure. Team of Sabertooth is a card that has caused issues ever since it was printed. It was never just, oh, give this indestructible because I'm attacking, right?
It's one of those things that, you know, 100% in all of play design, not as bad as Oko, but with Team of Sabertooth, they're like, okay, we're going to make you have this 4-3 that's indestructible, so what is the cost for that effect? And we're like, all right, you have to bounce a creature, so you can't do it all the time. Like, there's a cost there, forgetting that Magic is a game of ETBs at this point, and that people would care more about the bounce than the actual indestructibility.
I believe that's all we have scheduled for today. That brings us to a close. Great deck of the week. Unfortunate loss in PDC. Congrats to our new CPDH committee members. And thank you to the prolific Nate Diggity and Medwards for submitting these new lists. It really does feel like we've kind of assembled the Avengers at this point in terms of who's getting yes. representation, which means you, yes, you, listening to the podcast right now, and also me and Chev, we should probably get off our lazy butts. Get out there and start brewing. The people yeah. in the committee are definitely going to work with you. So if you have an idea and you think you can execute it, we want this to grow as large as possible, right? And we want yes. to get contributions from as many different people and as many different deck building philosophies as possible.
Go check out the tryhards. Get into some of their online games. Start looking at the meta description. Check out cpdh.guide, your home for all competitive things. That includes a link to the Budget Brews database at a shorter URL. We should probably cut that part. I don't know how Tim feels. He's the guy who made the list. I mean, he knows we reference it. It's fine.
No, I can cut it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to cut the cpdh.guide or just the shorter URL?
Just the shorter URL.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. There's also tools like cpdh.guide that give you access to the deck list from Budget Brews. And a very nice set of spreadsheets of data analysis on these commanders that we talk about. We love Medwards. We love Nate Diggity. We'd also love to see another voice out there. You know, give us something good. which kind of, you know, we had a listener a while back, Schmish. If you're out there, keep listening and push through with that Aether Sworn Sphinx list, because we've seen Aether Sworn Sphinx do a lot. It's a shame we don't have a list on the database yet. Noyark, I believe, is the one who piloted the list of victory with the Possibility Storm.
Yes.
So if that list wants to enter, we're missing a Satyr Enchanter list again.
For sure.
So get that one on there. There are plenty of opportunities for people with decks that are even known to be strong. But for sure, try something new. It's a very open game. Keep giving us decks of the week, because after a while, we'll run out.
This is true.
We need you for content.
Please. I'm going to resubmit Cryptic Serpent.
We don't need you that bad.
Rude. Anyway, Hexstringers House of Commons, thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next one.
Let's go play some video games.
Speaking of the combo, I don't know what it is. Then we're going to repeatedly bounce and cast a creature with an ETB effect that will allow us to win the game. Which one is that? How are we? Which one is that, though? I don't know. Hold up.